الحمد لله وكفى والصلاة والسلام على سيدنا المصطفى صلى الله عليه وعلى آله وأصحابه وبارك وسلم تسليما كثيرا كثيرا أما بعد فقد قال الله تبارك وتعالى أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم يا أيها الذين آمنوا ادخلوا في السلم كافة ولا تتبعوا خطوات الشيطان إنه لكم عدو مبين صدق الله العظيم علماء الكرام most respected brothers and also sisters at the madrasa before I commence with a continuation of the Hadith Sharif which we have been discussing over the past few weeks. I would like to draw your attention to one or two very important matters. I have discussed this in some majlis last year or two, 3 years ago. Now the Quran Sharif style is the same too. That Allah Tabaraka wa Ta'ala discusses a certain issue, then suddenly He will give us the warnings, the azab that came upon the nations of the past, or Allah Ta'ala will give us ayats of Jannat or ayats of Jahannam. That is the style of Allah Tabaraka wa Ta'ala, Kalamullah. That it is not like a story in sequence form, because it is not a book of stories. Whatever was the need of the time, Allah Tabaraka wa Ta'ala revealed the verse of the Quran Sharif. Because Allah Tabaraka wa Ta'ala is both Hakim and Hakim, Allah Ta'ala does not give us laws like the governments of the time. Speed limit in this particular area will be 120, and if you exceed the limit, then 6,000 rand fine. They don't say after that anything more than that. So the law is implemented. There is a legislation that is passed, and after that everybody has to accept it and act upon it, and warning is given that if you are going to violate this law, then there's going to be either fine or there's going to be jail sentence. There's no hikmat, why, what, reasons, nothing of that nature. Allah Tabaraka wa Ta'ala, He does not just give a law. Take for example Ramadan. Now you have heard that in the month of Ramadan many times that Allah Tabaraka wa Ta'ala says Kutiba alaykumus siyam, fasting has been prescribed upon you, made farz upon you. Kama kutiba ala alladhina min qablikum, just as it was prescribed upon those before you. La'allakum tattaqoon, so that you may become muttaqi. To make it easy upon the people. That there were people in the past also who kept fast, who observed fast, and they didn't die by keeping fast from dawn to sunset. They all survived and they stayed in good health. And then again, it's not that Allah Ta'ala is running short of some food or water. Allah Tabaraka wa Ta'ala is not in need of our fasting. Allah Ta'ala wants to bless us. He wants to reward us abundantly. So He has prescribed fasting so that we become muttaqi. And if we become muttaqi, then Allah Ta'ala has got so much of things in store for those who are muttaqi. So in other words, He is Hakim and He is Hakim. Allah Ta'ala is both Hakim and Hakim. In fact, if you just remember these two words, then it solves a lot of problems. Hazrat Dr. Abdul Hayy Sahab Rahmatullah Ali, a great Khalifa of Hazrat Maulana Ashraf Ali Sahab Rahmatullah Ali, on one occasion he wrote to Hazrat, my wife is sick, my children are ill, this problem, that problem. So Hazrat replied to him that you have only mentioned problems there. What about all the ni'mats that Allah Ta'ala has given you, which you still have in spite of those problems? Like one of my friends gave me a cutting, that one kidney was auctioned on the internet and the bids went right up to 5 million. Now just imagine, people are prepared to pay that kind of price for one kidney. So how much of ni'mats Allah Tabaraka wa Ta'ala has still given you in spite of all those problems that you are having, why don't you write about that also? He says the moment he mentioned that, all my worries were over. And then he said, always remember that Allah Ta'ala is Hakim and He is Hakim also. Allah Ta'ala is wise. He knows what is best for us. Sometimes sickness is good for the person. Sometimes health is good for the person. Sometimes poverty is good for the person. Sometimes wealth is good for the person. So Allah Tabaraka wa Ta'ala knows best. So what I was mentioning is this, that Allah Tabaraka wa Ta'ala in the Quran Sharif, that is the pattern. It is like a father who loves the child, and the father is telling the child that, look, when you go to school, make sure that you don't befriend those people who are taking drugs. Don't befriend those people who are going to the cinemas and theaters or dodging school. And whilst the father is making nasihat to that little child, that child puts finger into the nose. So now the father says, stop it, take your finger out of the nose. It's a dirty habit. And then proceeds again. Look, when you go to school, do this, do that. Then again suddenly the child puts the finger into the nose. He says, what didn't I tell you just now, that don't do such a silly thing, it is a dirty habit, remove your finger. So whatever is the need of that time, now the father won't say that first I must complete my story and then I will tell him that about 1 hour ago you put your finger into your nose. Where the need was, the father will mention it. So we are discussing a hadith of Nabi alayhi salatu wasalam. And in fact, everything is linked to one another. If you have to really look at it in the Hadith Sharif, everything is mentioned in there. But without going into further discussion on that, what I am getting across to you is this, that recently, just in the past 2 weeks, there have been so many cases of disputes between parents and children, or brothers and sisters, or partners in the business, family members or friends, because they did not reduce to writing whatever the terms of partnership in the business was, or whatever it was. So I mentioned this some time ago, but I'm repeating, that the father should not be ashamed to tell the son exactly what his duties will be in the business, whether he is a shareholder or whether he is a salaried employee. Whatever it is, there must be no such thing as embarrassment or shame when it comes to ahkam of Sharia. Whether it's between brothers or brothers and sisters or parents and children, whoever it is, or friends, there is always a loose arrangement, especially when it comes to family members. The son does not know what he is entitled to. The father does not know. The brothers do not know. The sisters do not know. Now the business runs. Now if there are 5 children or 5 sons, all are in the same business. 2 or 3 of them are still unmarried and 2 or 3 are married. Now what happens is that the married ones are definitely going to draw more from the business because they are married. So their expenditure is more than the ones who are unmarried. Now if there is this loose arrangement that nobody really knows who is a partner and what is the salary, everyone is just drawing as they wish, then in the hearts there will always be this hatred, or there will be this concern. The one will feel that I am working very hard, but I am drawing less than the other one who is working not that hard as I am working. But just because he is married, he is taking much more than I am taking. And then he has got another car now, and he's got this, and he's got that, and he bought a house too, because there is no proper arrangement. Then when the person dies, it's even worse. The arguments are even bigger. So there must be this proper arrangement. There must be this reducing to writing whatever the business agreement is. How are they working? Whoever is on salary, it must be made clear that this person is going to get so much salary per month. The one who is working harder, this is going to be his salary. The one who is unmarried, this is going to be his salary. And if they are in partnership, then there must also be an agreement exactly what is the arrangement. Many a times the cases that we get, a wife brings from her father's side money into the business, or she brings into the house, and then she buys furniture, she buys this, she buys that. The children grow up in the meantime, and then somewhere along the line the father dies. Now if the father dies, now again there is a big argument. Some of those children who were married and they were living out, now suddenly they want a share, and yet they contributed in no way to the expenditure of that house, but they want their share Islamically. Remember that shares are not determined in accordance, I'm talking about inheritance, is not determined in accordance with how much a person has worked. Inheritance is something that Allah tabaraka wa ta'ala has fixed. Even if one brother is gone to Canada or America or England or Timbuktu, but if that brother after 50 years, he says that my father's property, he didn't even know the father his whole lifetime, but now he says that my father's property, I want my share. He is entitled to it. We cannot say that you are not in the picture anyway. But if everything is above board, if there is a proper agreement, then it makes it very easy that this land was purchased by so and so, or so much contribution was made towards this land and this property by the children, and therefore this much they are entitled to, and you will get your little share, whatever you are entitled to. So, but that can only happen if there is a proper agreement. And at present it seems that everybody just trusts the other, and they say that we have got no desire of another person's wealth or anything of that nature, and we've got no greed, never mind whatever happens at the time of death of our parents. They all talk like that. But when the father or mother dies, then suddenly you will find everybody interested in what they have left behind. So this is a hukam of Sharia. It will make life easy and comfortable and peaceful, and it will retain that unity between family members. Otherwise it is the same land and wealth and property which has divided so many brothers and sisters and so many friends and so many family members, because we feel shy. We say that this is dividing the family. If a person has to talk about it and say that let us make a proper agreement, then they say that this person is causing division in the family, whereas he is bringing about the means of unity in that family for a long, long time. Because if they are not going to sort it out in that manner, then so much of disputes will arise, and then it ends up in courts and thousands of rands are spent there. So it is extremely important that the person in his lifetime makes everything very, very clear, that who does this belong to. So much so that just between husband and wife also, allow each other to use whatever is in the house. The husband says, look, whatever is in the house belonging to me, you have full right to use. And the same the wife says, that whatever belongs to me, I give you the full right to use. But at the same time, it is clear that this furniture belongs to whom, the pots and pans and dishes belong to whom, the car belongs to whom, so that in the event of the death of one of them, it will be extremely easy to distribute. They will say that these things did not belong to the father, therefore there is no such thing as distribution in these items. Especially the problem arises when people are purchasing lands or buying homes. An average family, when they are buying a home or buying a land, then it is not easy for one person to find all the money to buy it. So at that time, one son is married and is living out somewhere but is quite rich. Another daughter is married somewhere, she is quite wealthy. Another son is somewhere else, and one or two are living in that with the father and mother. So the others, they will give some sort of monies to the parents. They said, all right, if the house is costing 100,000, I've got about 20,000, you take it from me. The other one says, I've got 10,000-15,000, you take it from me. But they don't make it clear whether this 10,000 is just a gift to the father to buy that house. Because if it's a gift to the father to buy the house, then this person cannot claim afterwards, this 15,000 more than whatever the person is entitled to as inheritance. This son who gave this 15,000 or 20,000 as a gift to the father, and the father purchased that house, then when the estate is divided after the father's death, then the son cannot say, but I also contributed 20,000 to that house, and besides the share that I'm entitled to, I want my 20,000 back, because it was a gift. And if it wasn't a gift, then it was be made clear that this is a loan. So if it's a loan, then even if that house, which at that time cost 100,000, but when the father died, that house sold for 150,000. So this son, will still get that share which other sons will get, and this 15,000 or 20,000 which he gave as a loan, he will get that 20,000 back. He cannot ask for profit now, the 20 years I want the interest on this money that I gave. And if it was not a loan, if it was not a loan, he invested it in that house as a share. He invested it in that house, then he must make it clear that I am investing this money in this land. The day it sells, then whatever groweth there is, then he will also benefit from there. And if there's a loss, then he must take the loss. But these three things must be cleared, whether it's a gift or whether it's a loan or whether it's an investment. The person is buying a share. The same in business houses, that it must be clear. Lots of fathers, they say, after all, who am I working for? I'm working for my sons, I'm working for my children. After all, they are going to be the ones who are going to take everything. It's very good and very easy to say that. But at present, what is the setup? That will happen when the father dies, then that is a story that will come up at that time. But at present, that son that is working there, that what about him? Is he employed or has he got a share? What is it? So these are issues which, if only we take into consideration, inshallah, it will avoid a lot of arguments, fights, quarrels, disputes. That whatever purchases a person makes or anything, whether if it involves a loan or share or anything of that nature, then reduce it to writing, even between brothers, parents and children. There must be no such thing as feeling ashamed to reduce it to writing. It will avoid problems for us in future life. Now that was just one thing, by the way, because recently these things are again on the increase. But now we get back to that Hadith Sharif of Nabi Pak Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam, in which we have already discussed at length quite a few of those issues, where Nabi Alayhi Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam says that my Rabb gave me very specific instruction and orders with regards to 9 things. That I must fear Allah in secrecy and in public. That I must maintain, Nabi alayhi salatu wasalam says, that my Rabb gave me very specific instructions and orders, that I must adopt moderation, whether it is a state of richness or poverty that I go through, in whatever state, but I must adopt moderation. I must only say that which is just and which is fair, whether I am in a happy state of mind or whether I am unhappy and displeased with the person. That I must maintain family ties even if they sever them. That I must give to those who deprive me of my rights. Even though they have deprived me of my rights, but I must give them their rights. I must fulfill their rights. And that if somebody has done injustice to me, then I must forgive the person. And then we came to that my silence must be meditation. And my speech must be zikrullah. So on that issue of speech being zikrullah, we discussed a few things, but today I want to bring to you a very beautiful story or incident in the life of a very elderly woman who had completed her pilgrimage and she was now returning. But due to some reason, her sons who had accompanied her, they missed her. Those days they did not have such kind of arrangements. So somehow she got lost. She could not find her way. And the children went away. They must have been searching for her. They could not find her. So she was at a loss. So on the side of the road, she was sitting there, looking very sad, an elderly woman. So Hazrat Abdullah ibn Mubarak, that great wali and saint, and Muhaddis, he was going past with his camel. Now the lesson that we are going to take from this incident is that how particular and careful this woman was, that she must not utter any word from the tongue which falls under the category of la yani, meaning useless. Something on which Allah tabaraka wa ta'ala will seize her or catch her on the day of Qiyamah. Because as we discussed earlier, that great amount of problems are caused by the incorrect usage of our tongues. Just one word and there can be community riots. In India, we noticed it, we witnessed it many times, that one fool has to make one stupid statement, and then thousands of Muslims' homes will burn, and so many people will lose their lives, just because of one statement. And we have seen it in our country and many other parts of the world, where one silly statement or one word, and after that we have havoc and chaos and disaster. Because just one matchstick is sufficient to light up a whole forest. Just one matchstick. So Allah tabaraka wa ta'ala in the Quran Sharif and Nabi alayhi salatu wasalam in the Ahadith and all the awliya-i-kiram, they place great emphasis on the control of the tongue. The person must think before he speaks. He must not speak first and then think. Because you can never bring back the word. The word is such a thing that once it's thrown out of the mouth, loves, in fact, that is why it is called. So once it is thrown out of the mouth, then you can never ever bring it back. It's gone. So this woman, she was a hafiza of the Quran Sharif. An elderly woman, she was a hafiza of the Quran Sharif. We will say that that is nothing unique. There were lots of hafizas of the Quran Sharif in those days, and even in our times. But what is unique is this, that if a person asks a hafiz a question, to find the appropriate answer and to give the appropriate reply by using an ayat of the Quran Sharif, it's not an easy thing. It's an extremely difficult thing. The person has to know the Quran Sharif so well. And even if you know the Quran Sharif very, very well, it's not easy that for every question, your reply is with an ayat of the Quran Sharif. It's not an easy thing. But when this woman had made up her mind that she does not want to speak anything on which she can be seized or she can be punished by Allah tabaraka wa ta'ala on the day of Qiyamah, then Allah tabaraka wa ta'ala made it easy for her. So let us see what happened. Hazrat Abdullah ibn Mubarak is returning. Now he finds this old woman. She is on the side of the road and he can see that she has a problem. She is in distress. There is something that she wants to find out, or her children went missing, or her husband went missing. So he stopped by her. He stopped by her and he made salam to her. Elderly woman, he made salam. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah. So this woman immediately replied with a verse of the Quran Sharif, which is in Surah Yasin. Salamun qawlam min rabbir rahim. Salamun qawlam min rabbir rahim. What a beautiful reply she gave. Then he questioned her that what are you doing here? You seem to be a woman who is in a distressed state. What are you doing here? Hajj is over. All the caravans are going or gone. And why are you still here? So she could have given the reply. It was not haram. As we are talking, or if anybody asks her the question, it's not haram. In fact, it's necessary to speak to the person in the language he understands. Now these people understood Arabic. The language was Arabic. So the reply that she gave, وَمَنْ يُضْلِلِ اللَّهُ فَلَا هَادِيَ لَهُ وَمَنْ يُضْلِلِ اللَّهُ فَلَا هَادِيَ لَهُ, which in effect means that whomsoever Allah tabaraka wa ta'ala, or the ayat's meaning is that whomsoever Allah ta'ala misguides, then he will not find any guide. There will be nobody to bring that person on track if Allah tabaraka wa ta'ala has decided that this person does not want hidayat, this person does not want guidance, this person is rejecting all the ayats of the Quran Sharif. So much nasihats are being made. The Quran Sharif was revealed as guidance. The Anbiya alayhi salatu wasalam came. So many other hadis and guides came. But this person is not interested. So finally Allah tabaraka wa ta'ala puts a seal on those hearts. So Allah ta'ala says that once Allah ta'ala has sealed those hearts and that person is misguided, then nobody can put that person on track. But what she meant by this is that I am lost. I have lost the way. Now she could have said I have lost the way. But she recited a verse of the Quran Sharif conveying that same message. that she is lost. She wants to return home, but she is lost. So he asked her, questioned her, that where do you intend going? What is your destination? Where is your hometown? Which village are you from? So she gave a beautiful reply. Subhanallazi asra bi abdihi laylam minal masjidil haram ilal masjidil aqsa. Glory be to Allah tabaraka wa ta'ala, who took his servant in a short part of the night from Masjid al-Haram to Masjid al-Aqsa. Now that is a reference to the Miraj. But in that ayat of the Quran Sharif, or by reciting that ayat of the Quran Sharif, she conveyed this message that she is returning from Masjid al-Haram. She has completed the Hajj and now she wants to go to Jerusalem. Masjid al-Aqsa is her destination. Jerusalem is her destination. So this is what Hazrat Abdullah ibn Mubarak understood. So he questioned her that for how long are you waiting in this spot? For how long are you sitting here? She said, Salasa layalin sawiya. Now this is not easy. It's not easy to just get an appropriate ayat of the Quran Sharif in reply to the question. Said, from three nights I am here. So Hazrat Abdullah ibn Mubarak, he said that for 3 nights you are here, then what about food and drink? So she replied, Huwa yut'imuni wa yasqeen. My Allah feeds me and my Allah gives me to drink. Meaning that somehow Allah tabaraka wa ta'ala provides for me. It doesn't come from the heavens, but some caravan that's going past, somebody might stop over and give us something to eat. Somebody might stop over and say, we are not going in that direction, but there's something to drink, without her asking, without her extending her hands or begging. Allah tabaraka wa ta'ala provides for her. Because of her piety, Allah tabaraka wa ta'ala was providing for her from sources unknown to her. So she says, my Rabb it is, my Allah it is, who gives me to eat and who gives me to drink. So from this, he understood that this woman has received some food and drink. But he asked her that what about wuzu, that you don't have water to make wuzu, so how do you make wuzu? Because you must have wuzu to make your namaz. So she replied, فَتَيَمَّمُوا صَعِيدًا طَيِّبًا. Allah tabaraka wa ta'ala has revealed in the Quran Sharif the verse that if a person does not find water, then he must make tayammum on clean earth. So he says, if I don't have water, then there is a verse of the Quran Sharif in which I have been given instruction that I must make tayammum. So I make tayammum. Hazrat Abdullah ibn Mubarak rahmatullah alayh then told her that I have got some food. If you want to eat and drink, then I have got some food and I have got water too. So let me give you some food and get something to drink. So immediately, without hesitation, she replied, أَتِمُّ الصِّيَامَ إِلَى اللَّيْلِ. She conveyed the message by this verse of the Quran Sharif that you must complete your fast till the evening, that I am a fasting person. Now here is a woman, she has lost the way, but she says that I am fasting. So Hazrat Abdullah ibn Mubarak rahmatullah alayh was taken aback. And he said, but this is not the month of Ramadan. You are returning from Hajj now. As it is, you have lost the way. You don't have food and drink. And you are fasting in this condition. So she replied, وَمَن تَطَوَّعَ خَيْرًا فَإِنَّ اللَّهَ شَاكِرٌ عَلِيمٌ. Which gave the meaning, because she is replying to those questions, which gave the very clear meaning, that if you fast, it is good for you. Nafil fast, nafil roza, if you keep, then Allah tabaraka wa ta'ala shows gratitude and Allah ta'ala knows that you are fasting for His pleasure, because it is not farz, it is not wajib, and you are keeping a nafil fast and which person would like to forego his food and drink, especially during those hot days. But when the person is doing it for the love of Allah tabaraka wa ta'ala, so Allah tabaraka wa ta'ala is shakirun halim. He also knows that with what niyat this person is fasting. So she gave the message that I am a fasting person and therefore I cannot eat and drink now. So Hazrat Abdullah ibn Mubarak rahmatullah alayh, he said that even if it is a farz fast, even if it is a farz fast, it is permissible to forego it when you are on a journey. If a person is a musafir, genuine shari musafir, not that he's traveling from here to Pine Town, so therefore he's going to make keep roza later, or he's running a marathon from here to Maritzburg, that's why he will fast later. Even if it's a farz fast, but he's a genuine musafir, then it is permissible for him to forego it and then keep fast later. He's not going to be sinful. But if he keeps it, then he will be rewarded and it is better for him. Because the journeys of today are not that tiring. The person does not get that stressed and strained. So if he keeps the fast, then it is better. But from the maslah and sharia point of view, if he is on a long journey and he is a musafir, then it's permissible to forego it. So he told her that even if it's a farz fast, it is permissible to forego and then keep it later. And you are fasting or you are keeping a nafil roza in this state. So she replied, "Wa antasumu khairal lakum in kun وَأَنْتَصُومُ خَيْرٌ لَكُمْ إِن كُنْتُمْ تَعْلَمُونَ. And Allah Ta'ala says that if you keep a fast, it is better for you if only you knew. That means the fazilat, the virtue of the month of Ramadan, if only you know, then you would keep the fast. Although you have a concession, you are exempted at that time, but still if you know the fazilat and the virtue of Ramadan, then you will keep the fast. So I am keeping a nafil fast." So then Hazrat Abdullah ibn Mubarak questioned her that why don't you talk like human beings normally talk? I mean, this is not normal. Why are you just giving me replies from the Quran Sharif? I am asking you a question. You could have given me a simple reply that I am keeping a nafil roza. You could have replied that I am going to Masjid Aqsa, or I'm going to Jerusalem. You could have given me any simple reply. Why is it that you are not talking like normal human beings talk? So look at her reply. She said, "Ma yalfizu min qawlin illa ladayhi raqibun atid." Which in effect means that any word that the person takes out from his tongue, there is no word that a person utters from his tongue but that Allah tabaraka wa ta'ala has got an angel who is guarding over him there. There is an angel who immediately records whatever word this person utters from his mouth. She was so concerned that she must not utter any word which will be a means of her punishment or something that will lead her to a difficulty in this world or the hereafter. Now when she is going to give a reply from the Quran Sharif, an appropriate ayat, so there is no extra word there, there is no lengthy discussion there, there is no debate, nothing. Just whatever is required, that much she is speaking. Then he questioned her that from which tribe, from which family are you? From which family? To which family do you belong? She replied, "Wala taqfu ma laysa laka bihi ilm. Inna as-sam'a wal basara wal fuad kullu ulaika kana anhu mas'ula." What concern this woman had. What khawf of Allah tabaraka wa ta'ala. La taqafu ma laysa laka bihi ilm. Which means that of which you have no knowledge, then don't pursue it. Don't try to find out unnecessarily. What does it matter to which family I belong? Why must you find out that? That means it's an unnecessary discussion. I'd rather spend that time in some zikr or something else, but don't enter into unnecessary discussion. Why must you worry about which family I am from? I'm an elderly, old woman. What must you worry about that? One wali of Allah, he went to somebody's house and he tapped. He went in search of someone. So from inside a reply came that he is not here. So he questioned that where is he? That's all. Where is he? Now there's nothing wrong with that. If we have to find out where is he, there's nothing wrong. But for that, for 32 years he made Tawbah. That why did I ask a useless question? Now to him that was a useless question. That there could have been some reason, sometimes the person is gone out somewhere and the family does not want to reveal where the person is gone. So now by asking where is he, the woman might have to speak a lie. Look at their far-sightedness. That many a times it happens that a person is gone out somewhere and he does not want the whole world to know where he is gone. So now by asking this question, where is he, if it was a trip that was being made in secrecy for some reason or the other, or he was going to solve some problem in the family or something like that, now what reply is that woman going to give? She will have to speak a lie. So why did I ask a question where I could have made that woman speak a lie? She said he is not here, so I must try again later. Although this is not a masla, because sometimes if the person wants to know that what time can I get him, it's a different question. But to ask where is he, so now that is what worried him and bugged him. Many times in our lives too it happens that there are certain things that it could be embarrassing for the person. He doesn't want everybody to know that he went to resolve the dispute between two brothers, so and so, or anything else of that kind. So at that time, why make that person speak a lie? The person is not here, we'll try later. We'll just stop here, inshallah we'll continue with this. But let us just take the lesson so far from what we have read. There are lots of other questions and all her replies are from the Quran Sharif. But the lesson is this, that these people were concerned that our tongues must not utter anything that is contrary to Allah tabaraka wa ta'ala's hukam and will and desire. This small piece of flesh which we term as the tongue, which Allah tabaraka wa ta'ala put or placed between 32 teeth and locked it up so that we use it very, very carefully. People are firing away talaqs and then after that regretting because they didn't give it a thought first. So they fire away the talaqs and then say that I didn't mean it. So there is no question of not meaning it. If the person fired away the bullets of talaq, then that woman will be divorced. I have explained in some other majlis that many a times this question arises, especially in forums and conferences and other places where so-called intelligent people want to discuss the ahkam of Sharia. They say that if a person has given 3 talaqs in one sitting or in one breath, so then the wife is going to suffer now, the children are going to suffer, and so many other people are going to suffer. So I explained that indeed we also say that they are going to suffer. And the Shariat also does not want them to suffer. Therefore the Shariat warned the husband that you should not use the words of divorce and talaq without careful consideration. And if the need arises, there is a genuine need for separation and dissolution of the marriage, then give just 1 talaq. 1 talaq bain, that is sufficient. After the iddat, that woman can marry whomsoever she wishes, even after just 1 talaq bain. After the iddat has expired, that woman is released from the bondage of this husband and she can marry whomsoever she wishes. She doesn't have to demand three talaqs. This is the misunderstanding, that until three talaqs are not given, the marriage does not end. But if she does not want to marry somebody else, and the husband himself has changed his mind, or there is a change of heart, then it is easy, because it's just one talaq, get two witnesses again, give mehr, and repeat the nikah. So the door is not shut completely. What is the need to give three talaqs then? But if he gave three, then indeed she is going to suffer. Shariat itself says that it is haram to give three. But if a person drinks alcohol, it's haram to drink alcohol. So he will be lashed if it's an Islamic government. Although he did a haram thing, in the same way here it is haram to give three talaqs in one breath, but if he gave it, then the effect it will have on that marriage of complete dissolution, irrevocable. Now, as far as the suffering is concerned, I think I explained that all these murders and killings that are taking place, or other kinds of crimes that people commit, and when they stand in the docks, and when the punishment is given, when the verdict and the judgment is given, that this person must go into prison for life. Now, we don't hear there the world saying that why should this person go for life, because he's got a wife and children. The wife didn't commit the murder, the children didn't commit the murder, they didn't commit the crime, they were not selling mandrakes, so they will be suffering. And the judges also acknowledged that as a very good argument, and they said, yes, you've got a very good argument, whoever has 2-3 children and a wife, so they can commit any crime now, because we don't want them to suffer. The husbands can now commit any kind of crime. They can commit murder too. Only thing, they must prove that they've got wife and a few children. We will say that this person must go and get his head examined. There's something wrong. So we accept that the mistake was made by the husband, but the wife and the children are suffering. Now their suffering, Allah tabaraka wa ta'ala will reward them. He will give them plenty of reward in the hereafter. And on that sabr and patience that they exercise, even in this world sometimes later on, Allah tabaraka wa ta'ala opens the doors of His rahmat and mercy for them. But the punishment is on the husband. That why did he make such a silly statement? Why did he not give consideration to what he was uttering? So this is the lesson that we take from here, that we should be very, very careful in the usage of our tongues. It is creating great amount of fitnas in our society. Great amount of fitnas. Brothers, sisters, husbands, wives, children, everybody seems to be fighting just because somebody made a statement, criticizing, making mockery, teasing, joking. Joking is permissible. Nabi alayhi salatu wasalam joked. But if we believe that this person cannot take a joke, or this person will be offended by this joke, then it is not permissible to joke. And especially in our times when people are so sensitive, until you do not know the person 101% well, that this person can take a joke, and the joke also is an innocent joke, it's not going to cause him any harm or any embarrassment or shame, then only you joke. Otherwise, avoid it. It's better to avoid it than to end up with a kind of a problem. Now, these are all important matters. This is what we term as akhlaq and muasharat. It's easy to make namaz and zikr and tilawat and ibadat and all that, and make hajj and umrahs. But when it comes to akhlaq, muasharat, muamla, dealings, then that is where we seem to be failing. May Allah tabaraka wa ta'ala give me, give you, and the ummah, the tawfiq to bring into our lives the akhlaq, the muamlat, and the muasharat, the etiquettes, the morals, the characteristics, and the teachings of Rasulullah Pak sallallahu alayhi wa sallam. Then we will find unity, we will find happiness. If not, then these problems are just going to increase. And then it goes to such a level that people get nervous breakdowns, and stress, and depression, and all kinds of problems. وآخر دعوانا الحمد لله رب العالمين. اللهم صل على سيدنا محمد وعلى آل سيدنا محمد وبارك وسلم. ربنا آتنا في الدنيا حسنة وفي الآخرة حسنة وقنا عذاب النار. اللهم ربنا فاغفر لنا ذنوبنا وكفر عنا سيئاتنا وتوفنا مع الأبرار. اے اللہ ہمارے گناہوں کو معاف فرما، صغیرہ کبیرہ عمدن خطاً ظاہری باطنی ہر گناہ کو معاف فرما. اے اللہ ہم سب کو صراط مستقیم کے اوپر قائم فرما. اے اللہ ہمارے قلوب کو تو نورانی بنا دے. اے اللہ ہر قسم کی لغزش اور گناہ کو معاف فرما دے. اے اللہ ہمیں اعمال خیر کرنے کی توفیق عطا فرما اور ہر قسم کی معصیت اور گناہوں سے ہماری حفاظت فرما. سب کو صحت عافیت عزت سلامتی نصیب فرما. جو بیمار ہیں ان کو شفا عطا فرما. جو قرض دار محتاج تنگ دست ہیں ان کی پریشانیوں کو ختم فرما. جو بے اولاد ہیں ان کو اولاد صالح عطا فرما. جن کو تو اولاد دے چکا ان کو نیک اور والدین کا فرما بردار بنا. تیرے حکموں کے اوپر چلنے والی اولاد بنا. اے اللہ سارے عالم کے اندر دین کی ہوا کو تو چلا دے اور پھیلا دے. ربنا تقبل منا انك انت السميع العليم وتب علينا انك انت التواب الرحيم وصلى الله تعالى على خير خلقه سيدنا ونبينا مولانا محمد واله واصحابه اجمعين برحمتك يا